On this episode of Lifestyle.org podcast, we've got Garner Holt, the president and founder of the largest animatronics production company in the world. He's going to talk to us about how he overcomes obstacles, how he's been able to achieve the success that he has. You don't want to miss it. All right, some people haven't watched part one. We want you to really go back and watch part one so you get the full history. But just to catch people up, if they haven't watched part one, you have started the largest animatronics production company in the world. Companies like Disney hire you to do their theme park rides, Universal Studios theme parks, hundreds of places around the world, restaurants, Chuck E. Cheese, you name it. Have used you to create their animatronics, making you the largest in the world. And I want to talk to you about how you approach your business, because a lot of people watching this are saying, well, I'm creative. I'm an entrepreneur. I want to do something significant. I'm passionate about it in my heart. What would you advise them as they're looking at, okay, so you've got your passion, you got your dream, but you're seeing all these obstacles in your way. How do you approach, number one, just the overarching issues of there's going to be a lot of obstacles. How do you approach obstacles?
Well, you know, there's always going to be obstacles no matter what you do. Mm-hmm. And I've had a boatload of them.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And, you know, starting and operating a business is not easy no matter what you do. It's, you know, how all the realities of life and business pop into play. Yeah. But, you know, the best thing that you can do is I have a shop full of people here that are a lot smarter than I am at, like, all the different, you know, we have about 60 different careers in here. And, you know, they're all really good at what they do. So, you know, I think over time I've created a business that that slowly has brought some of the best in the world at what they do into play and you know, into the business. And so that's where we are now. In the very beginning, I learned to do everything myself. I had the first figures I built myself, and there were a lot of obstacles there, but I just had to overcome them and figure out how to do it because I couldn't afford to get experts to do it for me then.
Yeah. So you started at age 15, seriously building animatronics, built a haunted house in your backyard. How did you know, you're not educated to do these things? And especially back in that day, what were the resources that you had, or was it just trial and error?
There weren't a lot of resources because there was no internet back then. There was, you know, it was very difficult. There wasn't much to find at the library, you know. So I used to follow Disney maintenance people around and ask them questions about how they did things. And, you know, I learned about different components and things. And, I owe so much to my shop classes at school, which they don't have a lot of nowadays, but we're fixing that because we have an education division that's doing a new kind of shop class in schools called Animaker Spaces, but that's a whole different story. In the very beginning though, I tested out of high school when I was a junior, and I never went to college. So I really had to learn to do everything on my own by trial and error, mostly.
Yeah. You know? Were there any books at that time that showed you any hints of where to go?
Not really. There wasn't much. It was just pretty much asking questions with, you know, about different methods of making motion and hydraulics, pneumatics, and that type of thing, and learning electronics on my own, and learning metalworking on my own, and learning woodworking on my own, and, you know, to build the figures, the very rudimentary figures that I did in the very beginning.
Yeah. So basically, you just had to find, okay, so I've got to do metal work, so I got to learn how to do that. So I got to find someone to teach me how to do that.
So I'll tell you a quick story about, you know, so I'm building my first figure, my Uncle Sam figure. That's really what got me connected with the Disney parks, right?
Yeah.
So I went to make some eyes for the figure, and I got some wooden balls and I started painting them. I spent a couple of weeks trying to make eyes, and they looked terrible. They were no good. So I kind of threw up my hands and I said, well, I'm going to look in the phone book and find somebody who makes eyes like they have for people, you know,
like
implant
glass
quality
eye.
Glass eyes.
Yeah.
So I found a gentleman in San Bernardino and called him, told him what I was doing. He said, you know, I'll make you a pair of eyes, but they're like $3,000 a pair. And I was like, well, that's 10 times the budget of my whole figure, right?
Yeah.
So he said, well, come on down. I'll talk to you. Come on down on a weekend. So I rode my bike down to his shop. One thing led in a long story short. We got to be really good friends. And he said, well, I won't make eyes for you, but I'll teach you how to make eyes. So I spent months on weekends going to his shop. And I got to the point where I was actually making implant quality eyes for people. That, you know, I'd stand in a lab coat. Here I'm this kid standing in a lab coat while he's fitting people with eyes and everything. We got to be really good friends. He was kind of like a mentor. Mm-hmm. But so, you know, but that was just one little piece of my project. But it just, I think the point is that you find a way to overcome your obstacle, no matter how long it takes or what you have to do it.
Yeah.
And that still sticks with me today. I can talk to my people about eye making and, you know, I mean, all the things that I learned is valuable today.
Now talk about your people. You've got a lot of people working here. I just met a guy, Bones, Rob, who 16 years ago, he was building houses in Arizona, doing framework for houses, yet he's here. And I asked him, so what's your specialty? And he goes, well, actually quite a bit of things. I can do fiberglass. I'm rigging up these animatronic people here with the wiring and the hoses and stuff like that. He goes, I do quite a few things here. My question is, now people come to you and say, this is what I'm passionate about. I want to work in this industry. How do you help them to overcome their obstacles? Because as I understand it, many of them come in not having yet all the skill sets that you need them to have. How do you help them overcome those obstacles?
So we hire a lot of people who are experts what they do. You know, if we need an engineer, we hire a degreed engineer, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the people that work here are just passionate about what they do, and they're fanatically passionate about something, and they just want to work here because they've toured the place. It's like, we make magic here. We make figures that entertain people all over the world. So they're really, you know, sometimes they'll practically sleep on the doorstep to get my attention to come to work here.
Yeah.
And quick story about a young lady that we're talking to right now. I met her years ago at D23. She's just a little young girl in high school. And she said, I want to work in animatronics. I want to work for Garner Holt Productions. And how do I do it? And I want to be a mechanical engineer. I said, well, be a mechanical engineer, you gotta probably go to college to do that, you know?
Yeah.
And she says, well, if I go to college and become a mechanical engineer, will you hire me? And I said, if you get to be a mechanical engineer and you're that obsessed with doing it, I said, we'll talk to you about that for sure.
Yeah.
So 4 years later, another D23 Disney, you know, convention, she walks up to me and says, remember me? And I didn't, you know, and now she's a big girl. And she pulled out a portfolio of pictures. She says, here's pictures of you shaking my hand many years ago. And she says, you told me that if I went to school, she says, I went to school. Now I'm a degreed mechanical engineer. So I'm here to you can hire me now. And so we're hiring her because, yeah. I mean, what could I say? I mean, she followed her path of what she wanted to do, and she made it work. And she came back and said, you know, you said, and I'm like, I did. So, you know what I mean? No, but that shows you. I mean, I tell my people, it's like, how can I not hire somebody that's that passionate that has worked 4 years to get in here?
Yes.
You know what I mean? How can you not?
I see that. And I imagine, you know, because of your path, coming up and having people tell you, well, you got to do this first. You got to do that first. A lot of people telling you, well, these hurdles that you have to overcome just to have a conversation with me. You probably had many of those growing your business and growing up. So I imagine when someone comes to you with a similar passion and a similar story that it kind of tugs on your heartstrings a little bit.
Well, let me tell you about a young lady. We have a department in here called Skin Engineering. It's developing the skins for the figures.
Yeah.
They can be anything from a bird to a 40-foot tall fire-breathing dragon like Fantasmic at Disneyland.
Yes.
In fact, we just made a skin for Fantasmic of a whole dragon skin.
Oh, that's awesome.
So the young lady that does that, Patty, that works in Skin Engineering, head of the department, right?
Yeah.
Hispanic lady. So go back about 15 years, we hired a janitorial service for the shop. Mm-hmm. They would come in and vacuum and clean the toilets at night, you know, and then go.
Yeah.
And so we had them about a year, and this young lady would always smile at me and always say hello, and I kind of liked her. So fast forward so we ended up not using the service anymore after about a year and a half. She came back in a couple weeks later, and I walked into the lobby. She's standing there, and she said, and I'm like, why are you here? And she said, I watched what you guys were doing while I was working here. I like what you do so much. I'll do anything to work here. And I said, you know, I can start you in, I can start you in the very lowest level, fiberglass, learn to do fiberglass. I said, it's dirty, it's sticky, it ruins your clothes. I said, it's a mess of a job. She learned to do fiberglass work over a couple of years. Then she started mold making in fiberglass. And then she started urethanes a couple of years later. And then a couple of years later, she started in silicone and matrix tooling, we call it, for the figures. And so fast forward about 15 years, she's the head of our skin department. And she basically is considered to be probably the best in the world. And Disney's even said she's the best that we've ever seen.
Wow.
That can make these skins and all the different methods that you have to do to make these. And some of them are very complex.
Yeah.
And she's one of our most valued employees.
Wow.
And it all happened because she had, she just wanted to do this so bad, and she came to me and just didn't want to hear no, you know.
Yeah.
And she was willing to start at the bottom and work her way up. You know, everybody nowadays wants to, you know, become a millionaire overnight, but you know,
yeah,
if you work, you know, years going up the ladder, you'll get to a point of great success, you know.
I think you've touched on something that is a real issue with a lot of the people that I'm working with, trying to coach, especially those who are young graduates, especially within the millennial generation right now. A lot of the coaching I'm having to help them understand is just because you have an idea and a degree, you're not the expert yet. And I don't know if you deal with that in some of the people that you hire, but helping them understand, as much as it is painful, there is a process of becoming an expert.
Sure.
What do you see as the process of any young person becoming the expert in this field?
You have to be very humble, and you have to be willing to learn, and you can't be a know-it-all. You know, people will walk in the door and, you know, they're the best in the world at what they do. I've had artists come in and say, I've been an artist for 15 years and you know, I'm a great artist. And they'll show me the portfolio and I'm like, you're not an artist at all.
Yeah.
You know, and I've had kids come in here that like, oh, I don't really draw that well. And I, you know, this, and they'll show me something. I'm like, oh my gosh, are you kidding me? It's like, you're brilliant.
Yeah.
I'll hire you today. You know, you have to understand your own limitations, your own capabilities.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people don't.
Yeah.
But you have to be willing to learn. You have to be willing to listen to the experts, because there are experts here. And if you want to work into the fold, you have to listen to them. You have to learn from them. You can't come in and like, you know, well, I'm going to show everybody that I'm as good as they are walking in the door. It doesn't work.
Yeah.
It doesn't work at all.
Yeah, there has to be this openness for growth.
Mm-hmm.
And even though I think we always fight between these two visuals of ourself, the visual in our mind that sees, and to be successful, you always have to see where you're going to be 5-10 years from now.
Mm-hmm.
And the person that you are now, and they're not at the same place. I recall when I was in college, really feeling the passion. I was supposed to do something in Hollywood and on camera, and I was horrible at it, just really, really bad. I couldn't even look at a camera lens without looking away. And, you know, I had to learn over time through humility and humiliating experiences of seeing myself doing what I knew I was made to do, but then critiquing myself as harshly as I could and saying, so what are we going to work on now? And I've just found that to be really a process of, especially within the creative arts and entrepreneur, being an entrepreneur, you have to self-critique constantly, and you never outgrow critiquing.
And you have to be realistic, and you have to listen to the people who know. You know, in your mind, you may be a expert television producer, but if you meet real television producers and you're a young kid, you'll find out very quickly you're not. And then you have to step back and listen to them and let them. And you know, the younger you are, the more chances you have, because people like to mentor young people who are enthusiastic.
Yes.
I feel that way about kids when they come in and they're just fanatically enthusiastic about what we do.
I'd
rather have a kid like that. And because if they're intelligent, I can teach them anything in here. You know, I teach them electronics, plastics, anything. You know, I'd rather have that kid than I would some guy that's got a PhD that walked in the door who couldn't care less whether he was here or down the street making another 50 cents an hour. You know what I mean? I'd rather, I'd just say, you know, hey, go away. You don't fit in here. I want people that love what they do, that want to be here, that are passionate about what they do and care about what we do.
And
you know, have that flair for what we do. And they work out really well. They turn into really good employees. A lot of the people that are here are former friends that I had, you know, years and years ago
really?
That really, like Robert, you know, he was in the construction industry. You know, he was passionate about, we hired him for a particular purpose. And I think he went around and tried different things until he kind of landed on something that he really liked and we really thought he was good at. And then he just grew in that. And now he's the guy. He's the guy we go to for figure wiring and hosing and that type of thing. So, you know, you have to fit to what works for you and what you're good at.
So you are focused on these very creative arts. It's all about making things from people's imagination come to life, but that's not all you have to do. What are some of the other things about owning a business like this that you do, but you probably never imagined when you first started as a kid that this is what would actually occupy some of your time?
Well, you know, it's interesting. You know, you run into the realities of life and business. You know, there's money issues, there's insurance, there's, you know, facility, employees, HR, you know, people that, you know, I mean, you know, there's so many different things, and it's just life. It's just reality. It's just human nature. You know, we have, you know, so many, you know, we're really good at what we do, but when the things that happen that we're not expecting happen, just like any other company, you know, you have to deal with them and move on. And, you'll always run into that, and you have to expect the unexpected. You have to plan to what you're going to do when you run into problems and things. And you do that by learning from others too, that have businesses, and you find out, you know, you talk to people, you associate with people who have businesses, so you kind of learn about that. I learned everything the hard way. When my first job with MGM, they said, you know, I'd never done a theme park job before, and they said, give us a proposal, a bid, you know, bid on this job. And I said, okay, I'll have you a proposal and a bid in the next week. And then I walked out of there, and I came home, and I said to my mom and dad, I said, what is a proposal and a bid? And so she called a contractor friend of hers and said, asked, and he says, oh, sure, we do that all the time. She said, could he come down to your shop and like actually look at one? So I copied one of their proposals for an apartment building and used all the language on making my proposal. So it wasn't anything I learned in school. It was, you know, it's those things that you have to kind of learn along the way. But you do. You learn that there's a lot of things you don't expect that you're never gonna never realize that are out there, you know.
Well, especially with what you did there, because this was the era before Google, and you couldn't search the internet for what is a proposal and can I download a template for a proposal. You did the smartest thing that, quite frankly, is almost a lost art today, which is you went and you said, but who is doing something similar, because there were no other animatronic companies that you could say, let me see, we're in competition together for this contract, so can I see your proposal so I'll know how to write mine? But you figured out what is something that's similar enough that I can look and see how does a professional do it. And I think that's kind of a lost art today, because you, even though we have the internet, all information is not on the internet. There's still so many things that you have to go to other industries and say, what can I glean from you? So I think that's brilliant.
Well, Well, you got to work with mentors and you got to work with people. You can't be afraid to ask. You know, there's an old saying that I've used all my life that's called the things that are lost for the want of asking, you know, and I have always, my whole life, I've always been the kind of person, I've gotten into so many things and learned so many things by just going over and saying, hey, can I do this? Or, you know, if a helicopter landed out in front, everybody'd stand around and look at it. I'd be the kid that'd run up to the guy and say, I want to ride and I want to learn to operate this thing. And the next thing I'd be flying around with the guy in it. You know what I mean? It's like, just stick your nose into everything. Learn from people. Get to be their friend. Say, you know, get your, I want their card. I want to talk to you. I want to learn from you. You know,
That's fearlessness. Everything that you've described from your history and the previous podcast episode and this one, it's a fearlessness in your approach, whereas other people would be standing back. Oh no, I shouldn't ask the pilot for a ride. How have you overcome, because I'm sure you've had fear of the unknown. How have you pushed yourself beyond the fear?
I think I have a lot of self-confidence. I have a lot of self-confidence and I've never had a problem with that. You know, one of my employees related to me one time, he says, you know, people come to you with these crazy jobs. They'll say, you know, build a fire breathing dragon that's 40 foot tall. And he says, you just say yes.
Yeah.
And he said, I think it's like you run and jump into a swimming pool and then you decide on the way down if there's water in it or not, you know, and it's kind of like, you know, that's kind of, you know, I jump at things and then I figure out later on, you know, I'll go home that night and think, wow, how am I going to do this?
Yeah.
But I just say to myself, I got to figure it out. I have confidence that I'll be able to figure it out. You know, I just, you know, I don't, you know, and I'll tell you, and I've said this to myself before, so many projects, if I just sat back and spent a whole bunch of time deciding whether or not I could do it, I would have scared myself away and said no.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. My attitude more is to just say, yes, I'll do that.
Yeah.
And then you go away and figure it out. You get scared later, but it doesn't scare you to say no.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You just dive into it. You know.
I love that. I have two teenage boys. Mm-hmm. And I taught them, it's going on 10 years now. Not to say I can't. Mm-hmm. Because I can't closes off your brain. Mm-hmm. For example, my boys would want, like my youngest son, he wanted a drum kit. Well, I could afford it, but I'm not going to buy it because I don't want him to be a spoiled rotten kid that can't figure things out. Mm-hmm. So he was looking at drum kits and he says, you know, I want to buy this drum kit, but I can't afford it. And I was like, we don't allow that language around our house, not around the ice house. And so I said, what's the phrase that you need to be asking? Mm-hmm. And he smiled and smirked at me because he knew what was expected. He said, how can I afford it? Mm-hmm. So with my kids, with myself, I don't allow I can't. Mm-hmm. You have to change the I can'ts to how can I? Mm-hmm. And that sounds like what you do is you say yes because you're not going to say I can't. Mm-hmm. You say yes because you know the next question in your brain is going to be, now how can I do that? How can I build a 40-foot high dragon for a Fantasmic Disney show and make it fire breathing?
Yeah, that's the basis of my whole life is that. You know, like when you know, when I did the first job at a theme park for MGM, you know, I was tasked to build the largest ride in the theme park from the standpoint of animation and effects and controls and everything else.
Yeah.
I'd never done any of that. I'd never worked for a theme park before. I'd never contracted anything before. I had no employees. I was sleeping on the floor of my shop in a sleeping bag.
Wow.
I mean, there was nothing there. And now I had 6 months to build the equipment for the largest ride in the theme park. And, you know, I may not have slept only a couple nights in that 6 months, but we did it and we finished and they were happy and they referred us to others. So the whole story is, yes, I can do it. And then you figure it out and you make it work.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. You don't quit. You just say, I made a commitment. Yeah. Now let's go.
You just don't give up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. How do you help your team? Because I imagine there's often times when they get to an obstacle and they're like, this is insurmountable. How do you work with your team when you get to those seemingly insurmountable points in a project?
I watch them get to a point where it's insurmountable. And then I come in and say, we're going to fix this, you know, how do we get over this hump, you know, and we get all, and then it's kind of my responsibility to step back and find resources and answers to doing it, you know, so I help them. And then once they get over the hump, then I go away and look for other problems, you know what I mean? So my thing is just to make, you know, help make decisions to keep everything rolling, you know what I mean? Everybody runs into a problem and we just have to work together. I don't get after people when they make mistakes. Yeah. I think that's the wrong approach, you know, because I make mistakes, everybody makes mistakes.
Yeah.
When you make a mistake, you learn from it. If they keep making the same mistake over again, there's a problem.
Yeah.
But if they learn from it and they move forward and they learn and you know, can continue on with the project and make it work, then we've achieved our goal. But the things we make around here are unique and unusual machines that have, even though they're all similar, they've never been done before.
Yeah.
And they're like science experiments, you know, so sometimes they work well.
Yeah.
Sometimes we build something and it falls apart and we have to throw it away and start over, but we all learn and then we're ready for the next one.
Yeah. I think no team can work at the highest levels of creativity, doing things that no one has ever done and have the fear of failure. Mm-hmm. And so I've always told my team, you know, failure is not something to be feared. Mm-hmm. Failure is, I always say there's no losing as long as there's learning. Mm-hmm. And so what did we learn? Not what did we lose? Did we lose money or time or whatever? We didn't lose, we learned. And so for me, the greatest fear that I always tell my team is the fear of quitting. Mm-hmm. If you quit on me, that should be the biggest thing that you fear.
Yeah,
failure, you have to have the freedom to fail, openly fail, without worrying about your job, without worrying about, you know, your role, your status. Mm-hmm. I don't think you can have that fear in the creative
Everybody arts. Just has to do their best, you know, in a situation like this. And everybody has to be understanding. All the other employees need to band together as a team and say, look, we're all in this same boat together.
Yeah.
We've run into a huge challenge. I don't call them problems. I call them challenges.
Cool.
We say, we've run into a huge challenge. Now, how are we all going to band together to get past this? And we do that all the time out here. You know, it's a unique business and we have to have that attitude. You know, you can't get mad. I think one of the other big important things about my role in this company is the fact, you know, I have, you know, 75, 80 people. Mm-hmm. And I like to make, you know, a lot of people are afraid in companies to make decisions because they think they're going to get fired, you know, if they make the wrong decision, right?
Yeah.
So nobody, it slows the whole process down. I'll come in and they'll be vacillating about whether they go this way or this way. And rather than let them vacillate about it for a couple of days, I'll walk in and say, okay, let's decide that right now.
Yeah.
And I'll say, I'll judge it to the best of my ability. I'll say, let's go this way. Hmm. And they can't fire me, right?
Yeah,
so
you're
I
the
pick
boss.
One, they run with it. I say, you know what? This will either work or it won't. And if it doesn't work, then we know we should have gone that way.
Yeah.
But we're going to find out fast.
Yeah.
And it's going to keep things going. So I think that's one of the most important roles I have is being the owner of the company. I'm able to step in, make fast decisions to get things rolling or keep things rolling.
Yeah.
And I think that's been critical.
Well, that's huge. I could talk to you all day. And in fact, I'll probably be coming back to talk to you some more.
Anytime.
About this. Thank you so much. For more inspiring stories like this to help you become your best, don't miss out. Go to lifestyle.org for more podcasts and episodes just like this. We'll see you next time.